Good evening, inquiring minds. Welcome back to another semester, and welcome back to the show just in time for all the ghouls and vampires to start lurking about again. And no, I'm not referring to the collectors or the bursars, so if that's on your mind, go figure that out sooner rather than later. I'd wait around for you to figure that out, get back, but I can't because tonight I have a jam-packed program for all of you with a beautiful banshee, the queen of hearts, mystery music, creepy conversations, and now that I've gotten my quota of Halloween alliterations out of the way, onto the program before someone cuts the switch. Here goes. Okay, so one of my guests tonight, I am so fortunate to have in the studio the lead from Circadian Clock. Now, when you hear Circadian Clock around this school, it can mean one of two things. So it either means that clock within most living organisms that makes it possible for us to coordinate our behavior, environmental changes, day, night, all that, but that's not what we're talking about whatsoever. This circadian clock is one that you should keep note of. So if you fell asleep in biology, it's fine. I did too. So Circadian Clock is a five-piece rock band. They have a unique blend of styles, which includes rock, pop, punk, jazz, classical, everything in between. And last year, WHCS Radio was so happy to have them perform at our Knitting Factory concert. They just played a concert at Webster Hall this past weekend, which was a Halloween-themed concert. And recently in September, they also played before a crowd of 15,000 people for the Boston Freedom Rally in support of marijuana legalization. And today, I am thrilled to have Melissa Folsen-Logan in the studio with me. So, I am so happy to have you here, Melissa.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I know, she was nodding in the corner over there, and I was like, say something.
I want you to know I was gently agreeing with her the entire time. I was like, yes, those things are true. Thank you.
Okay. I am so excited to dive a little bit into you yourself. So you are a music major at Hunter College, mm-hmm. and this is your final year?
Yep, this will be my final year at Hunter.
Awesome. Okay, so why Hunter?
I went to Hunter because, okay, when I was in high school, I went to LaGuardia, and I really thought that I was going to get into the Queen's Conservatory. And I did very well. Like, I've been going to music programs my entire life. I started music when I was 4. I'm playing in every single music program. I went to, you know, did the music program at my school, PSN 73. I went to Manus Preparatory Division for 10 years. I went to ISO, Interschool Orchestras. Like, I did every music program. I did a lot. So I was pretty prepared, and I did well at my audition, but I was kind of a delinquent in high school. I still am a delinquent. I just, you know, just do it a little better. But I was delinquent in high school.
You hide it when you need to.
Yeah. Bullshitting is a skill you acquire over time. So I was kind of a delinquent in high school. I didn't get very good grades. My average was a 75 because my music classes and the classes I liked, I got like 95, 98. And then I didn't show up to my math class ever out of protest because it was 8 in the morning. So that was like a 45. So I was averaging around a 75. So they didn't let me in on the basis of the fact that I had gone to summer school twice, NPM school twice. Because that's how much I refuse. My school just kept giving me classes at 8 a.m. And I kept being like, I'm not going to do that, man. And they're like, well, then you have to go to summer school and PM school. And I was like, do it. And they did. So I didn't get into Queens College. I got into College Staten Island, though, because they were forgiving. And I met my professor, Professor Flusher. Amazing, amazing violin teacher. Amazing violin professor. Wonderful human being. So kind. Taught me so much about music and life in general, which are not disconnectable at all. In order to understand one, you have to understand the other. And he taught me a lot. I'm really grateful to that. So he taught there and he also taught here. So he was just like, why don't you just come over here? And I was like, okay. And that is why I go to Hunter.
Wow. Okay. So you are a violin player. Mm-hmm. You are a singer. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other instrument plans in the near future?
I play a little bit of guitar, bass, and piano. I'm not competent enough at either of them to consider myself an actual musician of those things, but I can write for them, I can play them a little bit, but most of the instruments I focus on are the voice and the violin, because those are my specialties. But yeah, I mean, I think about instruments and instrumentation all the time. I write for instruments that I don't play, hopefully they come out pretty all right, but I think they do. I really, mostly more than anything, I really enjoy composing, because I've been studying music theory very, very thoroughly for a really long time, and music theory is super important to me. music theory is the same equivalent as, like, you know, a chemist understanding the chemical structures, all the chemicals, how they interact with each other, what happens, how to separate them. Like, understanding and really being able to dissect the knowledge that you have functionally in your brain the same way that you conjure thoughts about words and how to form sentences in a way that's natural and organic is the same way that I think about music theory. I think that's really important to understand about music, that it can, you know, it is really... It can be a science. I think about it kind of like a science, and I'd like to. I enjoy thinking about it and dissecting it in that way. So I get kind of nerdy about it. Like when I hear something on the radio, I'll be like, "Oh, that's a minor second. It doesn't belong there. It never resolves. What are you doing?" Like, I get way too upset about that. But yeah, I really like music theory and really just all about music. But I really like composing music and be able to think about and analyze music.
So your bandmates, what kind of instruments do they play?
Mikey, as Mike Delfino, he actually goes to the school. Wonderful dude. He went to the school. He graduated. Lucky bastard. But he's great. He plays bass. I met him through Hunter, actually. We just hung out here, gave him a CD, and eventually we just became friends, and then he joined. Stage presence is fantastic, and I love him very dearly. And I got Ari on guitar. I met him through the studio. Ari is such an amazing guitar player. I'm honored every day that I get to play music with Ari because I really think Ari is a genius and one of the best players of our time. Then Ayumi is on keys. I met Ayumi when I was like 14 and she was 12. And we were both nuts. And I'm blessed and surprised every day that we remain friends. And because we've been friends for like almost 10 years. And that's a really long time in the city. So I'm really happy that I get to work with someone so talented. And we're still looking for a permanent drummer, so if you're good at the drums, hit me up. Yeah, we play with a couple different guys. One of our main guys we play with on drums is Leo Freire, who also went to this school and graduated. Lucky bastards. they're all really talented, wonderful people, and I really enjoy working with all of them.
Sounds like one big happy family.
It is. It's like it's nice when you. Like, when you're a kid, right, and you're like, oh, you know, we're going to do this project together, and we're going to make it together as friends, we're going to build this and do it ourselves, man. And it's cool when you get older, and that's, like, an option that you can create for yourself, you know? Like, you really can do that. Like, the people from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, we're all just friends hanging out, they're all comedians, they're like, yo, let's just make a TV program. And they're like, seriously? We can't just make it? And they're like, well, let's do it. And they did it, and they're super successful, and now they get to just do the thing that their project. And I love watching them talk about it, too, because they have so much joy in what it is they're doing, and you can tell everything about it is so organic, and that's what makes it beautiful. And I think that when people concentrate on really making art in that way, that it's really authentic and good and just quality. And I miss looking forward to that quality in the work of things. Same way that Breaking Bad is quality, same way that Steven Universe is quality. Just a heart. Doesn't matter what it is that you're doing, just that layer of heart being there, I think, is super important. So I like to think that I hold it to that same regard. And so do my bandmates. And to be able to put something together with people who are that talented and really believe as much in the project as you do and making something, coming together to make something that's bigger than all of you is, and that's better than any of you could hope to make it on your own. We've, in a year and a half, done more together than any of us have accomplished separately. And it's a really wonderful feeling to feel all that come together.
So Circadian Clock is with the current band that you have established right now. Mm-hmm. How long have you guys been together? A year and a half?
Yeah, it's been our first show ever. Technically, it was actually at the Brightside video shoot, which we shot in May in Bushwick, which was a lot of fun. Actually, no, not Bushwick, in Williamsburg. And it was a lot of fun. We rented out a house and we had a super big blast about it.
On that note, here's Brightside from Circadian Clock's new EP, Dreamer Reborn.
You cross my mind, but I have something I feel needs to be said. You used to look with rosy eyes, but now you look so serpentine, and I now know what they mean by walking dead. You used to be so fantastical, now your sun bow is wilted to shadows of sorrow. I used to think you were magical, now you wallow in pity and drown your tomorrow. We'll be right back. should have spot your tongue on a saucy head in the days, cause I'm so good without you. You're an empty shell of memories, and that's all you'll ever be. You used to be just like the sun, bright as you were, you cannot.
Happy Halloween, Inquiring Minds.
Ooh.
We are back in the studio. I have Mel from Circadian Clock with me. So you come from a very awesome background. Your band comes from an awesome background. This is all happy stuff. But we're supposed to be talking about pain and torture right now, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's that time of year.
Yeah.
Let's get into
some darkness.
We can't get into some darkness. So speaking of darkness, Sick, you guys just released a new music video, and it is a spoopy music
so spoopy.
Video. That video is pretty dark.
Yeah, we went pretty dark with it. Because the video, what the song itself is about, it has a lot to do with dealing with the demons that you have to live with. You know, it's a very frustrating thing when there's something that you want to move forward on and do better in, and you find that you can't just because your own personal demons are the things that hold you back. And I know myself, I personally, you know, everyone has their own issues. I personally struggle with depression, and it can be very frustrating not being able to be as capable as you know that you otherwise would be when you're dealing with these demons that are yours. And it's, you know, it's something that you can work on and do on your own, but it's still something that kind of haunts you. And Sick is about that feeling of helplessness. Really, that's the central theme of the video. So we went sort of literal with it. So the video, I'm the main character, I guess, and I'm like a patient in an asylum, but it's kind of like an asylum where, you know, the patients have taken over. So, you know, the doctor's totally nuts, the nurse is totally nuts, then I start hallucinating, there's all these demon figures. It was actually really funny when we were filming it. The day before, I was like, Mom, I need all of the belts that we have in the house. Like, seriously, every single belt. My mom is a 75-year-old Japanese woman who lived through World War II, so she does not get it at all. And she was like, are you making some kind of sex video? And I was
Mom,
I'm not making a sex video.
Mother, but I wouldn't tell you if I was.
Yeah. be sure. Hey, Mom, can I get like a couple thousand condoms and some lube for a school project? Like, no.
I promise it's for research.
Yeah, it's science. It's like, no, Mom. It's not a weird sex video. It's just a video where I get tied down to a bed in a fucking completely abandoned mental asylum with belts. That should make you feel so much safer and better.
It's all right. I promise. They're all my friends. They've given me reassurance.
Well, it was actually really funny. We were filming it because, like, I'm the leader of the bunch, but, you know, like, it was my idea. I was the one who was, like, you know, helping to direct it, and it was, you know, my creative vision. So it's really funny because everyone I work with is an absolute sweetheart, and they're so respectful and kind. So they're, like, you know, tying me up to the bed, tying me up to, like, a cart. They're, like, we have, like, you know, these, like, knives that we're using to, like, you know, just as for effect, really, like, you know, oh, crazy, scary stuff. But, you know, there's, like, moments of people tying me down. Every time, I'd be like, are you okay? Is this comfortable? Are you fine? Do you feel safe? Is this what you want to do? Are you sure? Are you comfortable about this? Every step of the way, people were checking in on me. And I thought it was really funny that people would be like, are you okay? And they'd be like, yeah, I'm fine. They'd be like, great. And then they'd, like, put, like, a knife up to my neck and be like, yeah, now start filming.
I wish every experience was like that. Are you okay? All right, okay, we can do the crazy stuff now. All right.
Bring in the knives and the aliens.
Yes. Yeah. To be perfectly honest, when I first saw it, I kind of got vibes from, maybe it's also because this has been on my mind recently, mm-hmm. The X-Files, they're going to be doing a reboot. And so you see aliens, you see all these creatures, and you're just like, what in the world is going on? But it is an awesome track, and that is what you folks are going to be listening to right now, Sick by Circadian Clock.
Enjoy.
Oh, Okay, folks, you just listened to Sick off of Circadian Clock's new EP, The Dreamer Reborn. And I'm here in the studio with Melissa from Circadian Clock, and I want to know what went into the production process of Sick's music video.
It was a really good experience overall. I learned a lot I worked really closely with the editor, but we go into some dark stuff, you know, it was like, you know, hallucinations is a lot about, you know, there's a lot of dark lighting. It's pretty creepy looking, you know. Overall, it's a pretty dark video, but I'm pretty happy with it, especially because I wanted to display both our creativity and our potential, because I only spent about $700 on the video. And, that's the total budget of hiring, the total budget of everything, basically. And I was really happy with what we were able to do with that. Bright Side was a professionally shot video that we hired. We shot with a company, and that came out really well. But that was very much, you know, our party track, and it's really lighthearted. Everyone's having fun. Sick, I wanted to do something a little bit more purposefully creative, storytelling, on purpose, very dark, to contrast with how light Bright Side is, to give people a sense of our
Bright Side light.
Yeah, it's Bright Side's pretty light video, guys. I wanted to capitalize on that contrast, because I thought that would I just wanted to be able to display kind of what it is we're doing. Like the EP that both of these songs are on, Daydream Disorder, was an EP leading up to our ultimate album that we hope to come out with pretty soon. Title still in progress, but Daydream Disorder. Oh yeah, the title's not in progress. I lied about that. The title will be The Dreamer. That's just the title of the album that we're coming up with, about these two people who are destined soulmates who are also destined to never meet in their lifetimes. And the only time they meet each other is in their dreams. So the EP that we released has, you know, some of the more central songs on there. And the one that I'm personally the most proud of is The Dreamer Reborn. It's kind of the most central song. It's the central song. It's a song that it's all kind of based on. And I don't want to spoil the plot, because it is a concept album. There is a whole plot. But the song is kind of like the unraveling of a person and the mashing together of hundreds of different dreams. So, you know, if you like abstract concepts and progressive rock that still has a lot of pop sensibility in it, I would recommend checking it out.
I personally love those kind of albums that tell a story, so I'm very excited to hear your album. I can only imagine, after listening to this one, what your album will be like. So everybody stay tuned, and if anybody wants to pick up that album, will it be available on iTunes and all the regular channels?
Absolutely. Currently, our EP is up on iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Google Play, any place really you can pick up music. We also have physical CDs, so we're working on figuring out how to sell from our website. Still, we'll get on that real soon. I personally prefer CDs. I'm a CD person. I like CDs. And it's funny, because as I get older, people are progressively starting to get away from CDs, and it's making me look old, which is ridiculous because I'm 23. But I'll give people CDs and be like, yeah, here's like a free CD. You know, I hope you enjoy that. And they'll be like, I don't have a CD player or anything that plays CDs.
It's because of those laptops. They're taking away the CD drives.
And it's just like, please don't do this. I like holding a CD. I like looking at the album art. I like thinking about the concept. I like thinking about the journey that the artist put in putting that package together. It might just be me, but, you know, I like that kind of stuff.
I'm sure people said the same thing about cassette tapes. You can still get cassette tape players, so for all you nostalgia folks, I do understand. I actually made my father buy a Blu-ray VHS player. Mm-hmm. So it is a Blu-ray player and VHS player combined, because nostalgia, it has a lot of value to it. Those old VHS tapes, all of my Disney films are on VHS. I'm not going to be replacing them anytime soon. What are you talking about? Anyway, so enough about me. Enough about that. Dreamer Reborn. You said that was your favorite track from the album?
Yes.
And so I think that you didn't want to give that away. So I will just put that out there, folks. I listened to it today, and it is fabulous. And all of you should check it out as well. As Sick, Bright Side, the EP, everything, the entire package. I love it. I think you're going to love it, Inquiring Minds. So, now onto the Halloween portion of this program.
Spoopy.
The spoopiness. So I learned the definition of this word recently. So, spoopy is both stupid and spooky. So, hopefully you will find enough of both in the remainder of this program. We'll see how much of one or the other. We'll try and strike a balance here. So, all right. First things first, I know that you said that you prepared a few horror movies to discuss for today. So, what would you like to discuss first?
Okay, I personally, one of my favorite horror movies, I don't watch a whole ton of horror movies for the express purpose that I think a lot of horror movies are not intentionally made cheesily, but maybe intentionally made cheesily. I think that there's a lack of artistry in a lot of the horror movies that come out nowadays. You know?
I think it's so sad because there can be so much artistry poured into horror films. Mm-hmm. Historically speaking, just like when you were describing the Sick film, Sick music video, that there can be so much of the story told through the lighting, through the music, through the character expressions, and it's really unfortunate when you get a subpar product at the end of the day.
I think so. But there's a couple movies that I think have been made really fantastically over time, and as I was thinking about it, I realized there was like an underlying theme, and I think what makes a good horror movie is proper suspense, and that seems pretty obvious, but I think that's lost on a lot of horror movies now that rely on like the jump cuts and the things like, oh, this monster popped out of nowhere and that's why it's scary. And it's like,
please
stop
the fake documentaries, folks.
No more. No more. Blair Witch Project was enough. No more.
It wasn't even that good. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, certainly I think it's great when there's a pioneering genre, but the Blair Witch Project was aight.
Yeah.
But no, one of my favorite horror movies is Silent Hill.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny that you say that because I really enjoyed the Silent Hill.
I think
the
Silent
games
so
and the movie, yeah. And it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people, the movie, ironically enough, it's called Silent Hill. There isn't much chatter about it. There really isn't. I feel like after it came out, I heard next to nothing about it. But
yeah, which is a shame. It goes over such great concepts. The execution of it is so great. But the reason why it's so scary is because even though you know she's the main character, for some reason, most horror movies are not good because you know the main character is going to be fine, like, basically the whole time. But her, it's just like, there's a layer, there's so much suspense. And a lot of it, also what makes it so great is that it's very psychological. Like, she, spoiler alerts ahead, because we'll be discussing the movie, but she, during the movie, you know, like, she goes into this place, and the husband's like, oh, where is my wife? Where is, you know, my child? How do I find these people? And he goes to the places, and even though you know that she's there, he walks through there, and there's, like, a different filter in the lighting, so you know, like, they're in different realities. And
it's
different,
an alternate dimension.
Yeah. But they're in different realities, and they're in different dimensions, so it's just like, oh, like, is she real? What's happening? Is she imagining this? Is she alive or dead? What's going on? Because there's just, like, what I really loved about the movie, too, aside from, I think the cinematography was fantastic, I think the artistic direction was fantastic, I think that just the overall, the way the movie is done with all the monsters, especially, too, because a good horror movie that has monsters, I think a lot of them are really cheesy. This one had really, really great ones because they play off psychology, because you're like, why are these monsters? Why do they look like this? How are they coming out like this? Because there's an underlying theme with the monsters, since they're all being generated actually by the town that they're in.
Because they're also on top of like an old coal factory as well. So the fires, the setting, everything very much makes sense. And it could be, you know, pulled straight out of, you know, a horrible event and story that happened in any part of the country where it used to be very industrial.
Mm-hmm. There's a layer of realism to the layer of mysticism caused by, like, the storytelling. But I really liked, I really loved the fact that there was, like, you know, this whole group of people, like, you know, the townspeople that were religious and scared.
The religious
and they were just
cult.
Like, huh?
There's always a religious cult.
I know, but I loved the religious cult element of it because I think it was just done really, really well in the way that, like, you know that the main character's gonna be fine, but when that cop character, who's so badass the whole time. Like, I was so sad.
Speaking of women in films, they actually did a pretty good job of developing the female relationships in that film, realistically speaking, because the cop is just doing her job. She's just trying to go about her business. And then when she realizes things are really messed up, I should probably employ the help of this woman to get the hell out of here. You know, it was a very realistic reaction instead of those macho cops like, oh my gosh, I got the perp. I'm just going to keep them in handcuffs the entire time. It's like, no, she's like, this place is nuts. I got to get out of here. And so these two women working together to find this woman's daughter too. It's surprisingly a very woman-centric horror movie that is done very well.
If you think about it, the main character is a woman. The anti-character, the woman's daughter, is, you know, a woman. The cop character is the central badass, like the fighting force. She handles so much that goes on. The only reason anybody really lives is because of her, really. The main bad guy, the religious cult leader, also a woman.
Yeah.
Really, men aren't doing a lot in this film.
Yeah, I definitely would say that passes the Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, Silent Hill.
It was but overall, it was just a really artfully executed movie. And I thought that the way that the psychological aspects are balanced with the cinematography, the suspense, and there's a couple jump cuts, but you know, it's not like jump cuts are bad. They're just, I think, overused and not used properly. But in that context, I thought it was done really, really well. I was really impressed by that movie.
Yeah. When it comes to horror films, I think that all of those elements really do play such a strong role. There is the emergence of like horror comedy films as well. And so some of those, you know, again, they can be kind of jokish or they can be done really well. I know that you just brought up horror movie characters and, you know, not knowing. You always know that the main character, you will be fine, but not knowing when the other characters will fall to the wayside. Mm-hmm. And there's actually this horror comedy that came out a few years ago called Feast. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I love about this film is that you begin the movie and the narrator, whomever, tells you exactly how long each character is expected to live, the life expectancy, and then it throws it out the window. So you're just there and you're like, this kid's gonna live a long, happy life. And then it's like he's the first one tearing apart. And so you're just there and you're like, everybody has lied to me and I have no idea what's going on. And you just have all these people trapped in this bar on a shoestring budget, this film is made, and all these monsters like are coming at them. And you have like the action hero guy and he's the first to go. And then you have like the grieving mother and you're like, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen to her? Like, she just lost her child. I'm sorry for the spoilers. But then she turns out to be a badass. And it's like, I love films that also subvert. Like, if you believe, I can predict where this film is going. I know the ending. Sometimes it's okay. It's like the journey is worth it. But if it's a horror movie and the suspense is there and you don't want to know what that ending is, if you just keep hitting me with these like hints and everything, we're intelligent. I don't like horror films that insult the viewer's intelligence.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem, that a lot of horror films, they can be done very artfully. There can be a lot of thought put into the construction of the film, but then if it's just decided we want something that teenage boys will enjoy and take their girlfriends to scare the pants off of them and then they'll just go home laughing with their popcorn. No. What about us other fans? So,
what about art, man?
What about that, man? I know. Sometimes indie horror films, they can be the ones that surprise you. There was this other one that I saw recently called Signal that I thought was really well done, where you had all of the TV screens, all of the radios, all of the phones, everything start emitting this signal that makes everyone just become incredibly violent and their capacity for understanding right and wrong just shut off. And you have these people, and I just thought it was a very interesting kind of metaphor for our current society, how we're always so glued to our phones and we're always so attached to our television screens and our computers, and it's like, what would we do without that? And you don't know who is sane and who is not insane and who are the people that are going slowly insane because everyone around them is insane. And that movie as well was done on a shoestring budget, but I thought that it was done very effectively because of the character interaction interactions and because the story at its heart, it's like you are pulling on our fears in Silent Hill. It's terrifying to lose a child and then get swept up in religious cults, but it's also terrifying to think that the technology that we are so dependent on now is the thing that turns us into monsters.
Indeed.
Indeed. So, did you have any other horror films you wanted to discuss, or do you want to move on to the next segment?
There's one other horror film, when you mentioned comedy horror films. I love comedy horror films. I have a lot of empathy, so horror films and movies with a lot of suspense can, like, be a little bit too much for me sometimes.
That's okay.
I like to think of myself as pretty intense, but because I'm pretty empathetic also.
She is pretty intense.
Oh, well, thank you.
In a good way.
Thank you. I do love comedy horror films, and speaking of female films or female empowerment films and horror comedy films, one of my favorite movies that I saw, I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, and I liked it so much because of this ending, but did you see Your Next?
I have seen Your Next.
Okay. The reason why I love Your Next so much is because it's like most of it's honestly pretty predictable, like the beginning of it. You know, it's basically about this family, and they all have this, like, you know, old family home that they're going to. And then so they all come back to the family home for, you know, a little vacation. Everybody comes and they bring, like, you know, their boyfriend or their husband or whatever. And so they all come back to the house, and then they all just start getting murdered.
They just start dying.
These people in masks outside of the house keep killing people inside of the house, and then it just becomes this battle about the people trying to survive. And at some point, like, it's like pretty typical mostly, and then you find out, you know, a little bit more about how, you know, the character relationships, and spoiler alert, so here's what happens. In the end, you find out, like, you think, like, oh, for sure, like, all these people are gonna die, like, there's a whole bunch of hired killers, like, there's no way, like, maybe they'll get around and, like, you know, there'll be a battle, but it'll be one of those things where, you know, you're not really seeing.
You're just gonna lose.
Yeah, like, it's one of those things that logistically they really should lose. And at some point, like, you notice one of the characters is, like, super capable. This female character, she's super capable. And she's the one keeping everyone alive because she's like, do these things. Make sure when you're moving by the windows, you bring, like, a chair or something so that, it, you know, the arrows that they're launching hit the chairs. And you're like, why is she so capable and smart? And you're just thinking she's really smart.
Where did she get that training?
But then you find out, because one of the characters is like, why? How are you doing this? And she goes, oh, well, my dad was crazy and we grew up on a survival farm where we were expecting everyone, because her father was expecting the government to come and kill everybody, so they were like,
we'll get into that later.
Yeah, but she grew up on a survivalist farm, so she's 100% prepared to take care, well, using any materials necessary, how to, like, defend and kill people. So once this other girl hears it, who's actually, you know, on the inside and, like, partially responsible for all the killing, you just see the look on her face, like, oh shit, this was a bad idea. And then she just kicks everybody's ass, like, so hard, and it was just so satisfying, because it's such a weird twist, like, it's almost so hacky that it's unique, like, the, oh, I just happen to be an incredibly trained badass, didn't discuss it or mention it earlier.
Since it's childhood.
Yeah, it's like, it's a really, really funny twist that I wasn't expecting at all, but I happen to really enjoy that.
Yeah, that was another really well done one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Speaking of people coming to get us, I actually did have one final Halloween segment for us, which was actually five things that are scarier than Halloween.
Ooh, dun, what? Dun, dun.
Anyway, so there are many things during Halloween that we talk about. We talk about ghouls, we talk about goblins, we talk about all those scary things under the bed. But we never seem to talk about the things that are actually plaguing this world, that are actually really freaking scary. Ooh. So I figured that we should reserve some time to discuss that, since I have a feeling you will agree with a number of the things on my list. If you don't, you just let me know. This is in no particular order.
Okay.
So tonight, folks, I'm sure you've all heard the news about the Republican debates that happened yesterday. And so on CNBC. And so my number five is the top Republican nominees at the moment.
That is a legitimately scary thing.
Yeah. So Ben Carson's in the lead. And he has recently, I don't know if you've been following some of these headlines. It's like sometimes the things that comes out of his mouth, I'm just like, do you want to make the papers, or do you genuinely feel that slavery and abortion are the same thing?
Whose right, I guess, should be superseded, the mother or the unborn child? Whose rights, who has greater rights?
In the ideal situation, the mother should not believe that the baby is her enemy and should not be looking to terminate the baby. You know, things are set up in such a way that the person in the world who has the greatest interest in protecting the baby is the mother. We've allowed the purveyors of division to make mothers think that that baby is their enemy and that they have a right to kill it. Can you see how perverted that line of thinking is?
What if somebody has an unwanted pregnancy? Should they have the right to terminate it?
No. Think about this. During slavery, and I know that's one of those words you're not supposed to say, but I'm saying it. During slavery, a lot of the slave owners thought that they had the right to do whatever they wanted to that slave, anything that they chose to do. And, you know, what if the abolitionist had said, you know, I don't believe in slavery. I think it's wrong. But you guys do whatever you want to do. Where would we be?
I don't know. I don't know.
And Republicans scare me. I think hypothetically there definitely has to be moderate, sensible Republicans.
Oh, they are just not talking, I imagine.
Yeah, they think they're just talking at a reasonable volume, which is a shame because that's not really what this country's about right now.
No, unfortunately, when it comes to the Republican caucus right now, it's like, we need attention. The crazy people are getting attention. We must start acting like them if we want some attention. Yeah. And it's just very unfortunate because I think that it's very short-sighted in the long term if the Republicans actually want to win.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm kind of hoping that this will, because I think there are Republican moderates out there, and I don't, while I am very much like, you know, a left-leaning liberal, I also think that it's important to have a dialogue with people that are different than you fundamentally. And
of
to
course,
make
that's
sure
what the show is all about.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to, you know, like, I have Republican friends, you know, I know lots of people who have very different viewpoints with me about a lot of things, and I think that it's important to have discussions with people, but I think it is also important that there be some level of a consensus of decorum. And I think that the problem with the Republican Party right now is that you have a lot of people who are, there's a very prominent polarization in the party, and that's why the Republican Party can't really get anything done. I mean, Ben Carson, Donald Trump being in the lead, like, what is going on with that?
They're political outsiders.
it's ridiculous. I mean, it's completely laughable what's going on right now. Like, the Democratic Party is like a party. Like, there's the debates happen, and sure, there was tons of stuff to make fun of in that too, but you know, there was at least some air of, you know, okay, let's discuss an issue, let's get to the point, let's, you know, focus on what their actual jobs are. Whereas the Republicans, it's just like, it's just a circus, and I feel bad for them. I don't like Republicans, their agenda, a lot of the things about the party, but I legitimately feel bad for them at this point because, like, I pity them. I pity watching them. I do. It's sad to watch what has to be some group of sane people who simply have an objective and a goal that they think that, you know, whose opinions differ from mine, be so polarized. Like, watching John Boehner suffer as the House Speaker, like, I don't like John Boehner particularly. I disagree with him on a lot of things. But to watch someone who, by comparison to the people who are in his party, be so defeated by the polarization present in the party, and to watch him, like, you can see the defeat on his face when he has to go and speak in front of these people. Just, yeah.
He looks pained.
And it's sad. It's like, I didn't think I'd ever feel bad for that dude, you know? But I do. I do feel bad for John Boehner.
What did they say? That, you know, it's the race to find somebody to fill the most undesirable job in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul Ryan, if you really are the next Speaker of the House, best of luck dealing with your own party. Yes, but number five, I have to say the top Republican nominees, they are pretty frightening right now. Again, you know, I feel the same way, that it is incredibly important to have a dialogue and to have at least, if not more, two parties, because not everybody has the same views. And so it is important in a democracy to not have everybody... You know, everybody has different opinions, and so that should be represented in politics. And unfortunately, for people who are moderate that decide, I have conservative views regarding the economy, they don't necessarily have a candidate if... They have conservative views on the economy, but they don't have conservative views when it comes to gay marriage or the right to an abortion or the legalization of marijuana, just among other typically liberal agendas. So it's just sad. We'll see what happens. Anyway, debate. Debate three. We'll see how many more debates it takes to narrow down the pool a little further. So number four. I just had to put this in there because they've been giving me an ulcer recently. The Mets, watching the Mets. I don't know if you're a baseball fan, but hopefully my boys, they get on. they just finish it. You got this far. You got to the World Series. You just got to get a little farther.
You can do it. Wow. I don't really follow sports, but to watch, I know lots of Mets fans, and just seeing your face right now, like, I'm sorry. I'm sad that this is a radio program and they couldn't see the genuine pain on your face. You're just like, come on, man, you can do it. Just, you got to do this for everybody. We believe in you. Please.
New York needs you to win. I grew up with so many Yankees fans. Just do this for us, boys. Mm-hmm. Do this for us. Oh my gosh. We'll see. We'll see what happens. That is, hopefully, you know, by Halloween, we will have an answer as to who is the one moving forward and will be the World Series champion. And by World Series, I mean in America, because, like, how many countries really play baseball? But anyway, continuing forward. So, number three. As I said, this was not in any particular order, though. Modern day slavery. Yes. Somebody asked me when I was telling them about this list before this program. They were like, are you going to say that with a straight face? And I said, yes, of course I am. Because, you know, it had to find its way on this list. It really did. Especially because you did mention how your band played at the Freedom Rally before, the Boston Freedom Rally before 15,000 people in support of marijuana legalization. And because of the modern prison complex in this country and the number of people that are in prison and its comparisons to modern day slavery, as well as slavery going on in several countries throughout the world and people just being cheated out of their wages on a daily basis, you know, forced to work without getting paid at all, several hours a day. I'm talking about you interns, my fellow interns out there. But I'm also talking about all of the workers throughout this country who are denied the benefits that they deserve or a livable wage. So,
yeah, modern day slavery. There's, I mean, there's lots of things. This world is a cruel place. You know, we have amazing iPhones because of slavery in China. We have cheap clothes from H&M because of slavery in Indonesia. We
have Bangladesh. You know, they had a collapse of another factory, and it's just
like we just as a country, we don't treat people right. We don't care about what happens outside of this country. We don't care about what happens inside of this country,
let alone outside.
Yeah, and it's sad. Modern day slavery is appalling. I don't know what else to say about it. It's I don't want to pretend to know more about it than I do. I just I wish that as a country we were more able to care about legislation that really can affect proper change in people's lives and making sure that we give people the wages that they deserve so they can live lives comfortably, and we make sure that we make clothes ethically and we make food ethically. And I understand it's a big world and it's more complicated than that, but I still think that ultimately, there has to be more done to battle greed, because the limitations of the human experience are that, and that's okay. To know that it's difficult to do something is okay as long as we know that we are doing that. And I think that as a country and as a population, as a human population, period, on Earth, as a collective, that there's lots of things that are just going to be difficult because life is hard and humanity is difficult and we live on this earth with limited resources and finite ability, finite technology that enables us to only do a certain degree. But to that extent, we are also battling against human greed, human corruption, short sightings, just errors that don't have to happen, sloppiness, holes in the system where they don't have to be. We're fighting harder because we're not fighting smarter. And I just wish as a country that we were more able to educate people, to properly pass legislation and prioritize the health and happiness of people over corporate greed, over profit margins.
Yeah, well, you were saying, you know, so many correct things and limited time too. That's another thing that we as all human beings on this planet share. We all have limited time and it's incredibly, incredibly upsetting to think that some people believe that the time of other individuals is not as valuable as their own time. And so working in these kind of conditions and knowing that you will never be able to escape that kind of complex is really quite troubling. And I think that is one thing that is much scarier than Halloween. And we shall see if that comes to a theater near you anytime soon. I can't say that it will, but maybe it will. So, moving forward, Edward Snowden files and the NSA spying on us constantly, all the time. I don't know if you're watching government or listening, but...
I mean, they are.
I know you are, but, you know, I don't think I did that thing that you think I did. Maybe not. I don't know. I can't tell. I don't know what you know about me, so how can I defend myself? So, we'll see. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but
the NSA?
I figured that is pretty scary to me. That is pretty scary to me.
I think that the NSA, ultimately, it's pretty scary, and it's definitely unethical, and I don't think there's enough research that really shows that it's a particularly effective way of getting anything done, and there's more information that they acquire that they could possibly comb through, and it's, I don't know, it's certainly unethical, but I mean, on an individual basis, just like, listen, the government doesn't care what I'm Googling, okay? Like, the government doesn't care what you're Googling. They're not going after most people. But on a moral level, it raises the question, if we're able to accept this, under what other conditions are we accepting being able to operate under? And that's really the more terrifying question, because it doesn't bother me that the government or Google knows what I'm, you know, after. After I Google, hey, what is this piece of software? Suddenly all my advertisements are about that piece of software. That, it's not great. I'm not happy about it. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is what goes a step further. At what point we continually trade our information and privacy for convenience. The Apple has my thumbprint signature because I have a phone that has that thumbprint signature. Is that healthy? Or what are they ultimately doing with that information? I don't know. I'm not super happy about it. I'm worried about what the future implications of our complacency will be.
I think concessions on a daily basis, as well as the transparency or lack thereof when it comes to this information, is troubling to me, as well as the fact that, you know, you're right. Why do you need to know my entire Google history? And is this just the first of many concessions to come if we are okay with this being available to whomever is working in the offices of the NSA right now? I know, guys, you saw that I spent a lot of time researching Halloween costumes. And I spent far too much on mine this year.
What are you going to ask?
Somebody knows. Oh my gosh, do you want to know?
I do.
You do want to know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I had been keeping it a secret, but I guess it's okay if everybody that's listening to this radio program knows what I'm going as this year. So I was planning on going as a Victorian, like a gothic vampire figure. So I have a full Victorian gown and everything, because originally WHCS was supposed to have a Halloween party and that did not work out. So now I have a costume and nowhere to go. So if anybody has Halloween party suggestions,
you can come party with me.
Oh, thanks for the invitation. Okay, guys, now you know what I'm doing for Halloween.
What?
If only I could have worn it to your Webster Hall performance. Okay, so, yeah, It's scary. It's scary the fact that they have this information on all of us, regardless of our innocence. And I know people are like, well, if you're innocent, then what do you have to worry about? But as you said, first it's this, then it's the fingerprints, and then it moves on forward and forward, and I just can't help thinking about A Brave New World. Mm-hmm. One day we'll all just... I'll be
That's
twins.
One of my favorite books.
Twins of twins of twins.
Mm.
Yeah, so... Stay unique, folks. Stay original. Number one that I put down was student loans.
Ooh.
I know. These are really frightening, I think, to almost anybody in our generation who has gone to college. You know, it is very, very rare to find somebody who is not petrified about their student loans as a college graduate. And I know that I'll be finishing up very soon. My mom talks about it with me all the time about her friends and how their children are now... She has friends who have four children and how all of them decided to go to $60,000 a year schools and how now it's like taking second jobs and they should be thinking about retiring. And here I am and I'm like, thank God for Hunter. Mm-hmm. Thank God I'm not going to have that kind of weight around my neck once I leave here. But
I like to crap on the educational system a lot because there are legitimately many issues with the educational system that I have troubles with. One of which I do not have any trouble with, however, though, is the CUNY system's affordability. It is really, really amazing that I can go to Hunter and CUNY and receive what is ultimately a fairly pretty quality education. And I'm lucky. This school is very affordable. And I received Pell Grants. I'm super grateful to that. You know, I'm not only a thank you government type of person, but to that end, very, very much thank you the government for paying for my college. Because I come from a really poor family, and I don't know that I cannot put myself in debt. I've watched my family went through debt. My dad, when I was growing up, put us in through a tremendous amount of debt. I watched the stress it put on him. I watched the stress it put on our family. I worry about my friends who did go to really good colleges that have, like, you know, $60,000 a year, and I worry about them because they're my age and they're just as capable as me, and I don't, you know, they're just as capable as me, and they're putting themselves in like $200,000 worth of debt, and I'm like, I can't even conceptualize.
And they're just starting life.
Yeah, I'm like, you have to deal with paying $200,000 for the rest of your life. I know adults who are like 40, 50 still paying it off. I'm like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane that in 4 years you can commit to something that would last possibly for the rest of your life. Like, going to school should not cost the same as having a child, you know? It shouldn't be something that changes the trajectory of your life so dramatically. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And it affects, you know, the job choices that you make. It affects where you live, what you do. And I personally am the type of person that I want to travel. I want to see places beyond New York City. And I know that that would have been impossible if I was laden with incredible student loans and debt, because that's what I would be concerned with post-college. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be, oh, where can I find opportunities next? Oh, I'm going to go back to Brazil. Let me look into programs there. Mm-hmm. It would be, I need to find a job so that this wonderful education that I received is paid off. So I think this Halloween, I hope that we've scared you guys sufficiently with this list. I don't know. How can you follow up such a scary list of items? So I think that all of you sleep tight. No, I'm kidding. No. If these issues, any of these issues trouble you, then do you want me to explore them further in future programs? Please send me messages through my social media. You can find me on Facebook under WHCS Inquiring Minds. I believe on Instagram under WHCS _ Minds, and the same on Twitter, WHCS _ Minds. Then we can discuss them in the future.
And if that wasn't spooky enough for you, remember, Fukushima still hasn't been sealed yet. The Indian power plant is on a fault line and not
in New York.
Yep, in New York, right upstate. So you're, you know, we're kind of Indian Point.
Yeah,
kind of screwed on that.
They always have those alerts, too.
Mm-hmm. The Indian, a lot of our nuclear facilities with nuclear weapons in them in this country are held open with open doors and like block wedges and run on floppy disks from like the 1970s. Global warming is totally real, totally running out of lots of resources.
Running out of water,
running out of polar bears. Our ozone is disappearing. There's plenty to be scared about. Life is terrifying. Good night, guys. Have a rest
easy. I hope
your
bed is cozy tonight as you're tossing and turning, thinking about all of these horrifying things. But positive side, we're at Hunter, and we have so many bright, young, intelligent folks who are hopefully going to go out and help save those polar bears and do much more to help our environment. So maybe there is a little bit of a bright side. Maybe you can sleep a little bit better tonight knowing that, you know, support your comrades. That friend of yours that's taking that orgo exam and it's brutal and they're just like, oh God, I just consumed 3 monsters. Like, you know, maybe like help them out. Get them a water. Mm-hmm. You know, keep them alive. They might do great things one day. Support your fellow students. It's midterms week. We have Halloween waiting for us at the end of the week. So guys, stay strong. And I guess I have one final question for you.
Yes.
Do you want to play a little game?
Yeah, let's play a little game.
Do you want to play a little
let's
game?
Play a game.
Do you want to play a game involving horror movie soundtracks and scores?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you now that these movies, you've probably heard of some of them. Some of them might be a little bit difficult for you. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see how this goes.
Okay.
I'm not going to make any guarantees, but I might have a prize for you. I might not. I can't promise anything.
Uncertainty.
I know. Inquiring minds want to know, will you be able to answer these questions?
Maybe.
Okay, excellent.
Keep coming in with a strong maybe.
So I have 5 songs, all from different films. They're all, you know, I would say released within the past 50 years or so.
Oh, good. So we're only covering 50 years worth of potential music.
I know, I'm generalizing. Okay, so.
It's good that we're being so specific.
I wanted to give you a little bit of an advantage, but not that much of an advantage. So you won't be hearing like Nosferatu today. Mm. So for the very first song, this film is a classic and I have a feeling you're going to be able to identify this movie theme. If you can't, then this entire film exercise might be difficult.
I know this. My bandmates play it every time we get around Halloween. Anytime they need me to stop talking on stage. This would be the theme from Halloween.
Oh my God!
That was the Halloween theme music composed by John Carpenter for his hit slasher film from 1978, Halloween. Mm-hmm. And it actually turns out that the music saved the film.
Oh.
And so at first, the original cut, when they were showing it to the producers and whatnot, without the music, people were like, this is kind of cheesy. Mm-hmm. Do you really think that we're going to be able to sell this? Mm-hmm. And then they added the track and everybody agreed that it really set the tone for the film. So you're right. You're very right. Music can really make or break. You know, if you're spending your time listening to subpar music, then what are you doing? Music. I love horror films because music tracks as well. Sometimes it's just the way that it can make you feel. Oh, it's incredible. So, well, the second one is going to be more difficult.
Great.
Yes. So, I can give you an easy one for the next one. Do you want an
no,
easy
no,
one?
No, let's just drag me through the mud. Let's really make me suffer. Let's see what's up with that. Halloween is all about
fabulous.
Suffering and pain, so let's do it.
Oh, excellent. So, the next song, this is from a 1970s horror film. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that helps you a little bit with this track. But it was composed by a German progressive rock band. I'm giving you a little bit of a hint.
I appreciate it.
Okay, so.
Well, it's very pretty. Well, it's very pretty. Okay, I'm gonna make a guess.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, because it reminds me a lot of children and stuff, I have no idea when this movie came out, but I'm gonna guess Chucky. Because it reminds me of dolls and shit, but I'm wrong.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good. But it's not Chucky. No. I don't even know what the music theme from Chucky is like, but it's not about killer dolls.
No.
It is about a killer ballet school instead. So I guess, you know, like the background music. Anyway, this is from
Sashay, then stab.
I wish that was actually a line from the film, but unfortunately, no. This is actually about an American student that goes to a European ballet school, and what she finds is actually far more horrifying than an average ballet school, which I can only imagine the horrors within one of those. So if you enjoyed Black Swan, check out Suspiria, 1970s, very atmospheric horror film by Dario Argento, and I believe they might come out with a remake or a third version, but it has witchcraft, blood, and this music track, which is by the progressive German rock band Goblin. Ooh. So I love it. I love the whispering in the background.
This is a horror movie.
Yeah.
Nothing more horrifying than whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, exactly. So you never know what's going on. So.
Well, there was no way I was going to get that.
It is a classic. I definitely recommend it, folks. And so the next film is a little bit more well-known in these parts than a 1970s Italian niche horror film. It's not that niche, but we'll go on to the next one. This is famous. It's from the 1980s. Mm. You'll be able to tell it from the moment that you hear the first few notes. And we'll see if you get this. It's not so much a horror film, but it's Halloween. Mm-hmm. It fits the theme.
Let's do it. Yeah. That's the sound of the 80s. So you sure this isn't from Rocky or something?
I think that Rocky definitely would have been a very different film if they had some kind of vampires thrown in at one point or another. Spooky. That was a major hint. Mm.
So Hail to the Day, Lost in the Shadows. Okay, vampires. Oh,
yeah.
Oh man. Interview with the Vampire is too recent.
And too serious. I don't think that they would have included an 80s beat track. Imagine Brad Pitt just looking very stoically in the corner and Tom Cruise is just running around in his underwear. Like, say hello to the
man. I might have liked that movie better, actually.
I know. Risky Business meets Interview with the Vampire.
I would love that.
Oh my gosh. And I think we just created an idea for your next music video.
Somebody give me a budget. Somebody give me $20 million. I got this. No, I give up. I can't figure it out.
Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
It's all good. It's all good. Check it out, folks. Lou Gramm, Lost in the Shadows. Lots of mullets. Lots of vampires with mullets on bikes. More could you want? What more could you want? And then little kids just running around being like, there are vampires, and all the adults being like, shut up. And so, and you just feel bad for these little kids. It's like all of those classic films where the adults are just bumbling around and have no idea what they're doing and totally incompetent. And I'm always like, guys, how much willful ignorance can you like actually fit into this film? Suspension of disbelief. Anyway, next film. So you are 1-3 right now, right?
Yeah, 1-3.
And you only got one. But next one is classic. I would say it's an unconventional horror film. But we'll see how you do. We'll see how you do.
Let's see how this goes. I promise to try. Is this the theme from Jaws?
It is the theme from Jaws.
Yeah. Thank you.
I told you you'd be able to get it. So John Williams, Jaws theme. I would say Jaws is a horror film.
I would say so. Jaws is a horror film. Jaws is, they accomplished a lot with that movie. You know, they set up a lot of tropes. For instance, just this, actually this music is maybe one of the most iconic things about that movie.
And the giant shark.
Yeah, also the giant shark. It's pretty iconic. But it was a good movie. Definitely set the stage for a lot of horror movies that came after it. A genre setting movie.
Yeah, so you heard it here, folks, on Inquiring Minds. Jaws, I believe it should be included in the category of horror films. Not exactly Freddy Krueger coming to get you in the middle of the night, but it is pretty terrifying to think about shark attacks. They still do happen.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about Jaws, though.
No.
Okay, so the next one is a fun one. We shall see if you can get this one. I have a feeling you'll be able to. If you love Halloween movies, you'll be able to get this.
I know this. I love this movie. This movie was great before Hot Topic ruined it for everybody. This is this is a Nightmare Before Christmas. Wait. Yes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, got it. I was really worried I mispronounced the movie. No, Nightmare Before Christmas. Jack Skellington. Other characters.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I
the
guess
sound,
Hot Topic
the soundtrack to this is excellent, actually. I did actually know all the words to the song at some point. Eyes going red. I can't do it right now. At some point, I hypothetically knew the words.
Okay, folks. So I think that we should get Mel back in here to sing This Is Halloween, maybe with her band.
I'll do
it. We'll see that one of these days. I've actually noticed that there are a number of bands, pretty notable bands, that have done covers of various songs from the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always interesting to see different takes on the songs that you grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out Tim Burton, he put down the hammer recently in an interview, said, "This is a Halloween movie, not a Christmas movie." Because somebody asked him, he's, "Is it Christmas or Halloween? The pressing questions. I gotta know before you leave." So it is a Halloween movie. Maybe one day we will have the Nightmare Before Christmas. And it will be like, I don't know, never mind. Nightmare Before Halloween. If there was a Nightmare Before Halloween and that was a Christmas, like Santa fights back, that'd be great. More
Nightmare Before Christmas, Halloween. The Revenge of Santa.
I know, that man, he deserved something at the end of that film when those kids kidnapped him. I was always like, Santa, are you really that good? No, I'm kidding. I was never like that. I was probably a little like that. Who knows? Anyway, you got 3 out of 5. So you won?
Yay!
Yay! Okay, awesome. And so, folks, Mel is a winner. Circadian Clock is a winner.
Yay.
I hope you enjoyed the songs. And I hope you all have a fabulous, fabulous Halloween. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Just thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. You can check us out on circadianclock.nyc. Our next show is coming up in the city, probably December 12th. We know we're playing in Highline. December 18th, we'll be playing at Black Bear, a show we're putting together for Mikey's birthday. So come enjoy some fun with us there. But yeah, mostly I hope everybody has a fun Halloween. Make sure you're safe. Ladies especially, make sure you're safe.
Check your drinks.
Yeah, watch your drinks. Be careful. I hate that we live in a world where that's something I have to say to people, but make sure you have a good time. Take care of the people around you. And thank you for listening.
And don't drive.
Do not drive.
Take the subway.
Uber.
Or Uber. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. All right, folks.
Have a fabulous Halloween.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left.
And then a step to the right.
With your hands on your hips.
You bring your knees in tight. Then it's the thrill with dust. It really does feel insane. Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
It's a dream. Free me so you can't see me. No, not at all. In another dimension with voyeuristic intention. Well secluded, I see all.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip.
And nothing can ever be the same.
Spaced out on sensation.
Like you're under sedation.
Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
Well, I was walking down the street just to have a thing. When a snake of a guy gave me an evil wing. He shook on me and he took me by surprise. He had a pickup track and the devil's eyes. He stared at me and I felt a change.
To the left.